go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our fourth installment of this extraordinarily important conversation with a man I've admired tremendously over a long time for his service to our country, both in uniform and in the civilian sectors of various agencies, including the Defense Department, and not least the work that he is about now as the chairman of a terrific organization, High Frontier. He is, of course, Ambassador Henry F. Cooper, better known to his friends like me as Hank. And you were talking before the break, Mr. Ambassador, about the extent to which your own work, that of defense science boards, that of, the various analyses that the Pentagon did during my time, and, you know, more broadly, just the underlying physics all argue for having robust defenses against these threats, not just the North Koreans, not just the Iranians, these relatively small-time players, but the Chinese and the Russians as well, and how you could do all of that from space cost-effectively and quite efficiently as well, using, back in your time, the so-called brilliant pebbles technology. Talk a little bit about that, and then what's available to us today that could make that even more effective and efficient?
I appreciate you bringing up Brilliant Pebbles because, in my mind, it was the premier product of the SDI era of missile defense, which ended on my watch when Louis Aspin took the stars out of Star Wars and canceled all of the space technology work that we were doing.
He, of course, was President Clinton's Secretary of Defense at the time.
Yes. When I tell this story, I can't help but begin when I was in Geneva and Edward Teller visited me on one of his many travels over there to work. And he said, "You've got to come to Livermore and look at some of the work that Dr. Lowell Wood is doing." And I, of course, agreed with Edward, who's been a longtime friend and colleague. He used to be a fellow who reviewed my work when I was a young buck at the Air Force Weapons Laboratory and so on. And so I went to Livermore and was very impressed with what Lowell and his team had done with what is called COTS, commercially off-the-shelf technology. And I think it's important to understand the point that this was then and now the same thing is true, that the private sector was actually pushing the envelope to the point where, for the first time, we could imagine how we would build space defenses that would literally be less expensive than the missiles that they are designed to defeat. And frankly, I can't do it because we don't have the time, but just to give you the notion, what everybody knows now because they have an iPhone like the one I'm talking on, at the time that was cutting edge technology in the private sector, and you could have an iPhone-like thing, no surprise now, that had the power of what was then called the Cray 1 computer, which is the fastest supercomputer available. And that became the brains of why it was called Brilliant Pebbles, the little tiny satellites, where each satellite knew where every other satellite in a constellation of thousands was. And what they were seeing as they looked down could be shared among that constellation. And basically, the idea was that like a massive system that works its own way, you could design who had the best shot and not necessarily who, but whenever any of the pebbles decided to shoot down an attacking missile, as I said a moment ago, in its boost phase where it's being launched, you know, it would just shout to the rest of the constellation and it would figure out how to readjust for future parts of the battle. This was really cutting edge thinking. Everybody who watches the current movies now understands that notion is a realistic one for many people. They go beyond what is now possible. But what I've described to you is what Brilliant Pebbles was about, and we were on the cutting edge. We had gone, it became the first on George Monahan's watch, who was my predecessor. It became the first of the SDI programs to actually enter a defense acquisition board approved program for concept validation and demonstration, a so-called DemVal program. And that was what they killed.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was good to go about the time you left office, and it was terminated at that point. And we wound up pursuing rather, I think, inadequately, but nonetheless pursuing other kinds of missile defenses, notably a ground-based system. You talked about some of them being deployed up in Alaska. Others are now down in Vandenberg Air Force Base. I did want to call attention to one other program. You alluded to it earlier in this conversation, the Aegis sea-based missile defense system. And I was hoping that you might talk a little bit about work that we did together at the Heritage Foundation, as a matter of fact, where you spoke yesterday to commemorate this important anniversary of the president's speech, and a Team B initiative that you put together to tease out an important augmentation of those ground-based systems. Tell us about that, Hank, and where we are today with respect to the Aegis defense at sea.
I am most proud of our Aegis BMD systems, which began on my watch. And I can't take all the credit on this. Admiral J.D. Williams was my partner in this, and he was able to persuade the Chief of Naval Operations to take my money to begin the Aegis BMD program. And it had many of the features that we want in space, because most of the Earth's surface is water. So in most cases, missiles that are launched from almost anywhere fly over water. And what do we have at sea? Well, it turns out that Aegis systems are deployed around the world. So that was an enormously important thing. Then we were kicked back to zero. And the time period you're referring to at Heritage was in the 1994 time period. The House was won by the Democrats, Newt Gingrich's contract with America, and Lowell Wood again, and I went to Philadelphia to a meeting of all the incoming new Republican House and met with Jack Kemp and said, what we need to have is a Team B, and can you persuade your good friend Ed Faulkner to establish a Team B? And that's how it came to be. Faulkner agreed and set up this Team B, which I led for 3 years, actually, at the Heritage Foundation. You were a member. Mike Griffin, who I've already mentioned, was a member. And the bottom line was that we wanted a global defense, first from the sea and then from space. We knew we couldn't get space to space at the time because the cards, political cards in the administration, was against us. And the ABM Treaty was still, you know, at the top of the list. And we even couldn't fully develop Aegis system because the treaty blocked that too.
Hank, as people are listening to us, I suspect that they find this simply unbelievable, that we ever were in a situation where we couldn't protect our people against missile threats, enthrall to this idea that, as you've said, the Soviet Union, which had immense capabilities to destroy us, would be unimpeded by any protection on our part. When you talk about the president's vision, Ronald Reagan's vision 35 years ago, I think it's no exaggeration to say he was anticipating a situation like today, where there, whatever he thought was going to happen to the Soviet Union, we know he certainly wanted to take it down and did, but that there would be other missile threats, and notably from China, for heaven's sakes, to say nothing of North Korea. And to have no defense simply because we had some sort of arrangement with the Soviets or Russians that left us bare to or naked to all of these others was insane. I mean, hats off to him and, needless to say, to you for your work in this area. And we're going to finish up in a moment by talking a little bit about both the threat we're facing now and what we have got to be doing about it. That and more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.